This is Real Life with Lisa Jesswine on Empower Radio. EmpowerRadio.com. Here's your host, Lisa Jesswine.
So if there are infinite ways to tell our stories, how do we choose the best version so that the telling leaves us feeling uplifted instead of disheartened, inspired instead of discouraged? Very important and poignant question that was asked by our guest today. We have the author of Step Out of Your Story, Writing Exercises to Reframe and Transform Your Life, Kim Schneiderman. Hey, Kim, how are you?
Good. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for being here. Now, I love the way you're sort of putting the two together of writing and your story, because everyone says, oh, you write your own story. You know, it's how you are in this world. So what does that mean to you as far as writing your own story, and especially about the title Step Out of Your Story?
Sure. Well, every life is an unfolding story. You know, it's a dynamic and unpredictable, potentially heroic story that's open to interpretation, especially your own. And when I tell this to people, they often sort of nod their heads and say, yeah, that sounds right. But we don't always, like, take the time to, until something happens, it's often hard to sort of step out of our story and ask ourselves, like, well, who is this character that I'm playing? And what's my story about? And who's writing my script? And how can the challenges that show up in my plot line help me, like every good character in a story, transform into a richer, more evolved character? So my book really offers a series of very structured writing exercises framed in the third-person narrative that help people step out of their story, that give them emotional distance from their own lives, so they can view it through another lens, a broader lens than they normally do.
Mm-hmm. Now, this goes right to one of the first times that I sort of bookmark something, and that's going to be right at the beginning of chapter 5, who's writing your script. Now, everybody just sort of listen to this. This is the first paragraph, but think of it as it relates to you. And Kim was just talking about this. Sometimes the roles we play and their societal prescribed scripts don't really serve us, yet we keep acting them out simply because we've become accustomed to playing certain characters. Much as we long to flip our scripts, many of us continue to cling to the same familiar, self-defeating internal monologues that we learned from our parents, peers, teachers, and other characters who were instrumental in shaping our stories. So this is what you were just talking about, but the one thing that steps out to me here is the internal monologues. So how do we get rid of that tape that's running over and over and in our head and says, okay, the role I'm playing is I'm so-and-so's sister, or I'm, so-and-so's spouse. And right. Then it's the negativity. So how do we get rid of those internal monologues?
Well, there's a couple of ways. First of all, we have to recognize what they are. So we have to identify, what is this script? Sometimes we don't even think about it. It's like this unconscious process. I want to just kind of just differentiate roles from scripts. Roles are like the ways that we define ourselves by in relation to others, like I'm a daughter, I'm a mother, I'm a doctor, I'm a stockbroker. And scripts are like the stories we tell about our lives. And I like to think of the scripts as our interpretation of the way, our interpretation of our story. So when something happens to us, like we lose a job, or we break up with someone, or maybe even when we win the lottery. I mean, it could be anything in our story. We jump to conclusions about what that means. So it means I won the lottery. It must be that I deserved it, or I lost my job. It must be that the world is unfair. So we come up, often the way that we interpret our story is based on a lot of our conditioning, right?
Mm-hmm.
Based on the ways that maybe growing up, it's like you've heard the whole story, the old story about the parent that tells their child that they're no good, and then the child believes that they're no good, and that becomes their script. And oftentimes people can live out their entire lives not really, aware that they're living by these scripts. So the first thing to do is sort of become aware of the script that you're living by. And then it's to take a look at, it's one of the goals of my book is to give you a step-by-step process of looking at your life as a personal, personal transformation journey.
Mm-hmm.
So looking at how, instead of looking when things happen to you, instead of getting into a victim story, of looking at how might the character of your story, who is you, if you were reading about yourself in a book, how might you want this character to evolve? And how would you want this person to, what actions or outcomes would you root for? And when you can kind of start to see that there's sort of, you know, the pages haven't been scripted for you and you really have an open book, then you can start to see, well, I'd really like this to happen. I'd like to see her, you know, finally stand up for herself, or I'd like to see him express what's really deep down in his heart. And so then you become, and again, I'm talking about looking at ourselves in the third person. So it's really you, like, how would I do that? You know, if I were reading about this situation in a novel and I wanted to, see a positive outcome, I would want to see the character be more assertive. So how might I become more assertive in my own life? What would that look like?
Mm-hmm.
And going back to what you were saying about roles, so sometimes I think we limit ourselves by the roles that we play. In fact, that can get a person really stuck. Sometimes people become very, very attached to these roles they've played their entire lives. And then when things change, like a recession, for example, I was helping a lot of people who had been affected by the collapse of the economy in 2008. People were like, who am I if I'm not this? Who am I if I'm not this wealthy financial manager? Who am I if I'm not this, like, you know, real estate mogul?
Mm-hmm.
And so part of what my job was to do was to get them to see that ourselves are much larger than the roles that we play, that we always have an opportunity to evolve, and that every challenging situation is an opportunity for us to look at ourselves and say, okay, so how can I deepen, how can I grow from this experience? What might it be teaching me? Mm-hmm. And when you can start to look at life that way, then the roles are a lot more that you embrace or can become a lot more fluid. Does that make sense?
No, it absolutely does. As you were talking there, I was thinking about after I came out of mainstream radio, which I had been in for 22 years, and I identified myself as this person who was very, you know, I was in the public eye. There was, you know, all this sort of go excitement stuff. And then when that ended, or I transitioned into internet radio, there was still a part of me that didn't know who I was because I was so used to playing that role of the, you know, in the public eye type of person.
Sure.
And I felt a little bit less than. And it was amazing to me how much I got sucked into, you know, if you will, I drank the Kool-Aid of the, you know, having that be what fed me.
Right.
And so rewriting it. I love it. I absolutely love that. Now, I have to tell you about when I laughed out loud. Okay.
Okay.
Reading this. This has to do with chapter 10. And it was dialoguing with the vulnerabilities exercise.
Okay.
And it was protagonist talking to fear. And so
Okay.
Can you tell them a little bit about the vulnerabilities exercise and what's that about?
Sure. So I like to describe the book. I'm going to go back a second just to reframe what the vulnerabilities exercise. So I like to describe my book as a character development workout for people who write, for people that like to write.
Okay.
So what does that mean? Well, we all understand when we go to films, when we watch movies, we all understand that the character of the story is going to change, that something's going to happen in the story.
Mm-hmm.
And that character, whatever happens to the character, is going, that how he or she responds to that situation will determine how he or she evolves through the course of the storyline. So I like to look at, that's what I mean when I talk about a character development workout, that life, the way that life challenges us is the way that we can work on our character. And oftentimes, when we go, you know, we don't think twice about pushing ourselves when we go to the gym.
Mm-hmm.
But when life presents us with opportunities to kind of like exercise our less developed emotional or mental or spiritual muscles, we often prefer like the low impact routines, right? Like, why do I have to do this hard stuff? But really, until we're really ready to embrace the challenges in life as like a finely tuned instrument for our character growth, we can really remain stunted. So I talk about we all have, you know, every story has a conflict, and no one really can resolve it but us. I mean, we can turn onto our supporting characters, and but ultimately, you know, it's for us to work through. And a conflict doesn't necessarily have to be a bad thing. It can be just like a challenge, something that stretches us in any given chapter to push beyond our perceived limitations mm-hmm. of ourselves. And really, we're growing all the time. We don't always recognize it.
Right.
But every
right.
week, we're presented with a new kind of way to, a new way to exercise our muscles.
The dialogue that you gave Fear was hysterical, though.
Okay, I'm happy to read it.
Please.
Yeah, I'm happy to read it. But so the idea is like the person, every story has an antagonist. And that can be a good character or like somebody that you care about or maybe somebody that you don't care about who's pushing you to develop parts of yourselves that maybe you didn't want to, that were a little less evolved. And I describe them in the book as sort of that, those are like your vulnerabilities. So when you're presented with a challenging situation, the reason that it's challenging is because something you haven't developed something in yourself that is to, it's exposing basically a vulnerability, a part of yourself that hasn't been completely developed. So one of the exercises I do is I have people identify, describe their current chapter of their life in the third person, and then I have them identify like who's the antagonist and what vulnerability is it exposing? And a vulnerability might be like fear. So like I lost my job in this chapter. The antagonist was maybe my boss, or maybe the antagonist is unemployment. And what that's exposing me is like a real sense of fear. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it's a sense of a loss of faith or something
sure.
that it's bringing up in me.
Yeah.
And so what I help people do is I help people try to understand what that vulnerability is about. So I'm just looking for it in the book.
You know what? Can I read it for you? Because
sure.
I have it right here because this is
great part. Okay.
This part is the funny part. Okay. So this is Fear talking to you. And you know, if you're honest with yourself, Fear has said this to you. Okay. So this is Fear talking. But what if you get hurt when you make those mistakes? And what if those mistakes can't be undone? You're not getting any younger. If you listen to me and stay in your comfort zone, you won't have to face too many uncertainties or feel regret later if you fail to achieve your goals or your dreams. And then this is you back. That's bleep. Life is full of uncertainty, whether I try new things or stick to my security blanket. That's the part that I loved. So that's us back to Fear saying whether I try new things or not, you know, it's not always going to be certain. So the ability to write what happens in our head and how it comes at us. And actually, you made Fear not so bad because it comes, sometimes fear disguises itself that way. Like, no, I'm really just trying to protect you.
Right. Well, Fear is trying to protect us. Actually, if you see Inside Out, the new Pixar movie, which
mm-hmm.
I just saw last week, and I thought was phenomenal.
Yep.
Like Fear, like, so they have like each of the emotions, like joy, sadness, anger, fear, and disgust are each like personified as a character inside this little girl's head.
Mm-hmm.
And what you see is that they all play a role. And so, you know, Fear is just trying to protect the little girl. And when she's a little girl, when she's an infant, you see that fear plays an important role because like it keeps her from sticking her hand in the electric, you know,
right.
in the electric circuit, you know what I'm saying? So fear plays a role in our lives, but sometimes it can play a detrimental role, and so we need to talk back to it. And my writing exercises, is they help us identify the voices inside of ourselves that aren't always dominant, but are there, so that we can be more curious, like, what are you trying to do, Fear? What's the role that you play in my life? And then Fear can speak, and then we can talk back to it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and conversely, I also have people identify the opposite of what they might be experiencing. For example, like if fear is their go-to emotion, and we all have go-to emotions when we're stuck. Some people go to anger. Some people have go to sadness. Some people go to fear. So I help people identify, well, fear is your go-to emotion. Then what is it like? What's the opposite of, what do you want to create more of in your life as a move, as in a direction of of evolving yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of moving forward. Well, courage would be the opposite of that, right?
Right.
So I do also a courage dialogue, which I have people have a dialogue with courage, and I ask guiding questions like, I help people imagine that courage is like a person that has a voice, and I have people start by asking courage, how can I access more of you? What gets in the way of making you a bigger part of my life? Where are you hiding? How do I get you to come out and play? So then I have a courage dialogue, which I actually found.
Oh, good.
Okay, so it says, courage dialogue. The protagonist says, courage, how can I access more of you? Courage says, first, know that I'm inside you, have always been there since you took your first little baby steps. The protagonist says, but why do I have trouble finding you? Courage says, fear made you think that I had gone away, but I lay nestled like a lion under your security blanket, waiting for you to pull the covers off and exclaim, let's go, it's time to take a stroll through the jungle. Protagonist says, ha ha, you have a great sense of humor, Courage. Wish I could find the humor when I'm in my fearful place. Life seems so serious then, like every choice I make has monstrous consequences. Courage says, the monster is not the consequence, the monster is the fear. The protagonist says, yes, but it feels so big. And Courage says, so shrink it down and put it in its proper place. If you can be slightly more courageous than you are afraid, you'll be in good shape. Trust me, I know what I'm doing.
Mm.
So while we might have the fear voices in our mind, and we can be curious and try to figure out what they're doing and talk back to them, we can also look for in ourselves for the voices that complement it or that, you know,
assist
that
us.
Compliment.
Yeah.
Yeah. And try to bring those forward.
Yeah. This was interesting to me because I was originally thinking, oh, it would be so interesting. We're talking about, you know, books and stories and what was her fate. And I just happened to come upon chapter 14 about choosing your own adventure. And you talk about Sugarcane Island. So
yeah.
tell the readers about how that relates to your book.
Right. Well, you know, so I used to read these. I'm sure people also read these sort of choose your own adventure stories where we would, you know, people you'd start out reading the story and then you'd have to make choices along the way. And how the choices that you're stranded on a desert island and then you're faced with, do you climb up this tree to see if to escape the bear?
Right.
Or do you, you know, run into the cave? You know, and then once you make a choice, you go to it brings you to another page and tells you what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, as a kid, I, you know, wanted always to know the end of the story. And I, you know, and then I so and but what I realized is that it was in some ways it was a little bit limiting. We always want to know what's going to happen at the end of our story.
Mm-hmm.
And while our choices have consequences, we can't always predict what's going to happen, and we can't predict it based on the past.
Mm-hmm.
So part of what I, what I try to do is to help people see that they can really write their own story and that it can be a lot larger, it can be a lot more interesting or more expansive than maybe the storylines that they think that their lives are limited to. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I mean, the thing that struck me too is you said that the choosing your own adventure portion caused you anxiety.
Right.
Because we don't want to choose wrong.
Right. That's right. That's so true. Right. I guess it did. Making a wrong choice. Well, that's the whole thing. While everyone naturally seeks happy endings, we can't always control the plot line of our story, you know. And even if events unfold in unexpected or undesirable ways, you know, we can still mine our stories for the silver lining, identifying, you know, enriching experiences and important lessons to carry into the future. And that's one of the points of my book is that we can find that redemptive narrative in our story when we choose to look at our life as a personal growth adventure.
Mm-hmm.
So that anything that happens to us can be seen as a way, as an experience that helped us evolve over time instead of something that was good or bad.
Yeah.
So I can look back, for example, in my own life where I've had been challenged, like having lost my father and having to become a caregiver and I becoming a middle-aged orphan and mm-hmm. all those choices that I had made along the way. I can look back and say, like, oh gosh, you know, like, well, I actually tell the story in the beginning of the book that I went through this very hard experience of becoming my father's caregiver, that he had been my childhood antagonist. And then after my mother died of cancer 10 years ago, I tried to develop my relationship with him, and then he got sick. And during that time of becoming his caregiver, we got extremely close
mm-hmm.
to the point where we completely healed our relationship, and it was really transformative for me and for him. And so that's maybe, you know, if I were to go back 20 years from now and had to think about, like, the ways I wanted my story to read or how do I want it to unfold, that's not exactly how I would have chosen it.
Right.
But looking back at it right from where I stand right now, I think it, for me, I could look at it as somebody could easily read that story or look at that story and say, that's really sad. That's a tragic story. But it's not how I choose to tell it, because for me, it was very redemptive. It was a redemptive story about my healing, and the energy that I got out of it helped carry me right. into the next chapter of my life where I felt mm-hmm. like a stronger person.
Mm-hmm.
And someone who, like, had more love and more compassion
right.
and just, like, a lot more resilience and a lot. And I was a lot more, you know, I was a lot more open to letting my life unfold instead of trying to control it all the time. And that's kind of, I guess, the point of the sugarcane thing, is that sometimes we can get into trying to control our choices to make good choices or bad choices.
Right.
And then we can get really anxious about, you know, if I make this choice and, oh, my God, this will happen. And if we really see that, like, we can just make the choice, like, we can only make the best choices we can from where we're standing,
mm-hmm.
and that the choices we make are going to teach us something.
Always.
And, oh, you know, and so if we can look at life for, like, how if I'm reading about my life as a story, and I can embrace that the things that are happening to me are helping me evolve into a better version of myself.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, you know, it might not be the person, the version of yourself that you imagined it to be, yourself to be, but it might be who you really are. It might be, you know, what you really like. They say you can't always get what you want, but you get what you need.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. A lovely song, yeah. I believe, was done about that
yeah.
as well. Well, we're getting down to the end here where we got to do our RL3. We've been speaking with Kim Schneiderman. StepOutOfYourStory.com is a great way to get hold of her. These are writing exercises to reframe and transform your life. Are you ready, Kim?
Sure.
All right. You
think so.
Here we go. Here's your first question. What was the last thing you remember doing that pushed you outside your comfort zone?
Writing a book.
And
speaking on the radio. I'm not kidding.
Come on.
I'm not kidding. It really was the biggest thing. Oh, my God. Writing a book. Like, I've always been a bit of a dreamer. And actually, what I learned that there's a big difference between having an right. idea and bringing it to reality. And then being on the radio, oh my God. Like.
Well, you've done a wonderful job so far. Here's
Thank
question
you.
Number two. Being a former journalist, you were always after the big story, the scoop. Which former or recent event would you like to cover?
Oh my God. You know, I'm not into the big scoop anymore. I'm more into personal stories.
All right.
Fair enough. I'm more interested in how people evolve as characters. So I'm like, for example, the presidential election, I'm more interested in, like, learning more about Hillary and Bernie Sanders and...
Well, good.
To me, I'm not into the big scoop anymore. In fact, that was one of the reasons why I stopped being a journalist. but I actually want to do more psychology-oriented writing. Like, I'm interested in the intersection between psychology and spirituality. That's something that I'm very interested in.
Love
so that would be, I guess, the big scoop.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And our final question, which is always the goofiest and silliest, is where we find out your fantasy name. It is the name of the first pet you ever had and the street you grew up on. What is your fantasy name, Kim?
It is Brigham Southlawn.
That sounds like a spice or something. I don't know.
Brigham Southlawn.
Oh, Southlawn. I thought it was Saffron.
No, Brigham Southlawn. I sound like... Maybe like I belong in England or something.
I know. Well, we are so excited that you were able to share your time with us, Kim. Your book, Step Out of Your Story. Everybody, this is a great way to move into that next part of your life. So thanks, everybody, for listening. And thank you, Kim, for being with us.